It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. With nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. The cold winds are coming back. It was kind of nice to walk by the window this morning. And I'm going to talk about that window a bit more and compare it to your windows and to think about those pretty little seedlings in the sunlight just thriving there, getting ready to go out, even as it's turning colder outside and that wind is blowing super hard. And you know, it's going to be cold. It's going to be freezing along the Gulf Coast. I suppose some of you folks may be right slap dab along the coast. Close enough for the storm surge. Those of you who live that close may not see freezing weather. However, I think most folks will. I'm sure if you're out in the far west of Mobile, out towards the airport, you're going to see it. If you're going to see it up, you're going to see it up at Jackson for sure, and Citronelle. You're going to see it even in Midtown. You're going to see some freezes coming up this week. But that is not a sign. That is not a sign that you are absolved from thinking about your garden and working on it. Because this is the time of year when it really counts. It really makes a lot of difference. And you got to get started. And I know we're all busy. And I'll talk about some of the things I'm busy on here coming up. But we want to talk a bit about starting these seeds. You know, you get long harangues from me this time of year about all the things you could be planting, and that's an important part of the story. But I want to focus on the stuff that you're starting inside, because there's a lot of stuff that you could be starting inside, not just could be, but should be. Listen to me, should be starting inside if you want to have a successful garden outside in the coming year. And I want to talk about what you need. And so I want to come back to this thing about having a window. A good window. A really nice window. Windows are nice at times. You may not want too many of them. And we put in windows for all kind of crazy reasons. And I'm not even sure. Some of the windows we put in should be put in. But boy, you got a good window. And it's facing south. Or maybe southeast, or maybe even southwest. And it's a perfect place for starting seeds this time of year. So I'm going to encourage you to think about that. One thing about my window, the window that I like, is that it is deep enough to capture that the low sun this time of year. And at midday as well. So I'm getting sunlight much of the day. It's pretty nice. And it's also nice because the sun is a little lower this time of year. And the trees in front of that window, something you need to think about, lose their leaves in winter. So I'm getting lots of sunlight, and that's pretty nice. That's pretty nice. If I had an evergreen in front of that window, it wouldn't have been any good. Find your window. That's the theme here. Find your window. Let's look for a good window. And once you've found that good window where you know you're, you know, it's that window that you want to see because the sun is suddenly out, and even though the wind is, it's warm in front of that window because the sun is, that's the window you're looking for. Find your window. And then let's talk about what we do there. You're going to want a little tray of something to catch water. It's just sort of inevitable. There's a lot of ways of doing that. There's a lot of plastic tops sitting around and various things. I actually have, which turned out to be very useful, one of these little roller cart things that you put under your bed that are supposed to store sweaters. It's plastic and you see through it. Has a little top that you can raise up, and I don't know what they designed it for, but boy, is it good. Is it good for starting ceilings? Because I can actually put a little heating pad in there. And the heating pad isn't transferring its heat into the floor. It's actually just keeping it all right there in that little box, which is raised off the floor on little tiny wheels. You can roll it around. Kind of cool. And I can start my peppers, even my peppers this time of year, even tomatoes this time of year, because I got that little heating pad in there. I got this little box, and I can, there's no need to open it up until the seedlings come out. And even if they come out, the top is clear, so I'm getting a little bit of sunlight. As things develop, I open those tops and let them get just pure sunlight through that window. But there you go. It's just a little device. You can spend a lot of money on lights somewhere in your basement and lots of other things, but it's really nice to find a good window and talk people out of whatever other use they thought they had for that window and put your plants there. Find a little table. I do think a heating pad is really nice, and they make little heating pads. They're not too expensive. You can use one that's designed for people. It's a little tricky to do that. Probably a slightly more dangerous, but not any significant danger. You can do that. But it's actually better if you get one that's just a small little heating pad that's designed for starting plants. Doesn't cost that much money. And find yourself an outlet that you can plug it into. And then we can get down to the business of having our peppers, our tomatoes, our eggplants. Shoot, you could even start beans. You can start a lot of things. Getting them ready for this coming planting season, because this is the time. If you're going to start your tomatoes, if you're going to have your own tomatoes, you got to do it now. If you're going to have fun with peppers, oh gosh, there's a million boring peppers out there. But if you want to have fun with peppers, and they don't have to be hot peppers, they're not athletic peppers. We're not talking about that kind of stuff. We're talking about just good, delicious peppers, like Jim in Georgetown's gotten excited about. These are like even habanero styles that just don't even have any heat, but boy, do they have flavor. These are funny, cool peppers, but you're going to have to grow them yourself, which is fun and which is nice. So we're looking for that window. I'll tell you what else is going on. I got my team. I don't know if the team is the right word. My crew, my folks, the folks who work with me at the research center, we're all getting ready for a week of NWCG fire training. And it's gonna be a really intensive thing. So we're thinking a lot about fire this morning. Somehow these windy days where the humidity is dropping, why would that make me think about fire? Ooh, I do. I'm thinking about it a lot now. I'm thinking about getting prepared for a good fire season. So I think we're gonna talk a little bit about that. I'm having to think about fire a lot. And for those of you who live in Midtown, for those of you who live in the middle of the city, fire may not be the best tool, let's say. But for a lot of you who have places in the country and you're wondering about why is this such a mess, we can talk about it. We can talk about fire and how to use it, and how to use it so that it benefits not just you, but Alabama and the creatures in it. And how you might benefit from that. Pretty cool. So I think we're going to talk a little bit about fire this morning, as well as talking about that perfect window, how to get your plants started, how to get them growing, because this is the time, folks. This is the time. You got, it's going to take you to get your tomatoes out March 1st. You got to start them by mid-January. Let's get it going.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. Yeah, it is that time of year. It is my job to harangue you about getting started in your garden. You'll just have to live with it because, you know, if you don't do it now, I can't fix it for you later. You got to get those tomatoes going. You got to get the peppers going. What do you use for containers? Is this an important question for you? I have a lot of different things I use in different ways. I think for peppers and tomatoes, I don't need a whole bunch of them. It's not like you're starting hundreds of them. I use, and you can look, there's a ton of little containers out there, and any of them work. I always remind people, don't start out with a big, big honking container, particularly if you're trying tomatoes and peppers. Can we go over this real quickly? Let's think about it. If you get a really big container for your tomatoes, and we'll define big here in just a minute, several things happen. One, you're not going to get it. It's hard to heat it up. And the soil's a little cold even inside your house this time of year. And you want to be able to use something like a warm spot. You want to be able to use a little heater, that little heating mat that is designed for starting seeds, for example, would be a good thing. Or you want to put it on a warm surface. But it can be hard to heat up a large container. Now, once you get it heated up, I agree, it'll hold on to its heat better. But it's hard to do that this time of year. You got nightfall. Temperature is going to drop. So you might need some supplemental heat. And if you start out with a big container, you're not going to get the heat. And if that heat is underneath, which it's generally a smart place to put it, got a little heating mat, you're not going to get that heat up to the seedlings. So start out your seedling small. There's another advantage, and that is that you can fend off, and this is controversial, but I can't disprove this, and I keep trying. You can fend off some of the seed wilting diseases that damping off, as some people call it, where seed stems get a little flimsy. You can fend that off, particularly with tomatoes and to some degree with peppers and probably with eggplants, by building the soil level up over the stem as it grows out. Those stems are going to be a little inky because you're growing them inside. So I always start out with a container that is only half full. And not a big container, a smallish thing. How big is smallish? I'm looking at the shape that I'm making between my second finger and my thumb, and it looks like something I might, like a little something I might look through to line things up. I mean, it's probably, I would guess that's 2 inches at most. And a 1-inch container would be plenty wide and not too tall at all. And this is for tomatoes, this is for peppers, this is for eggplants, a lot of things you're going to be starting this time of year. And just fill it about half full, and then put your tomato in there. And then as that tomato grows, keep putting a little bit of soil, putting soil into that container. Build it up on that stem. And with tomatoes in particular, and peppers to a slightly lesser degree, and eggplants to a slightly lesser degree, but with a lot of plants, what you're going to see is that they're going to develop roots all along that stem. And that also, for some reason, and I can't quite put my finger on why that is, it does tend to fend off, damping off diseases and other things that can occur when you're trying to grow things inside. There's another way to fend off damping off, too, and we'll talk about it. So there you go. What are you going to use for soil mix? It would be best if you could find a soil mix that had no fertilizer in it. That is a hard thing to do, folks. And there's several reasons why you don't want fertilizer in the mix that you're starting your seedlings in. But you're not going to be able to find that. I mean, you almost have to make your own nowadays to do that, because they got everybody hoodwinked, and plus they got all these people. It's just going to be really hard to find a soil mix that doesn't have fertilizer in it. But you want a mix that is well drained. You don't want any mix that holds on to moisture. You want it to be super well drained, and that's really important when you're starting seedlings. It means you're going to have to watch your seedlings. You're going to have to water them yourself. You don't expect the soil to keep them wet, because if the soil keeps them wet, they are going to damp off. So you want a good, well-draining soil mix. A lot of the standard mixes that you get, even at Lowdown Depot, they're going to be just the standard mix. It's going to have a lot of pine bark in it, at least the stuff sold around here. And that's a good thing. You really want a lot of pine bark. If you could make your own, it would be 75% ground up pine bark or more. In fact, I start my seedlings in a mix that is 100% pine bark, that's pretty broken down and pretty rotted, no piece bigger than my little pinky nail, and most pieces much, much smaller. And that's fine. That's a great way to start it. If you can happen to find some pine bark that's that small, that's a good way to do it. I actually go and buy it by the truckload, because it's very useful for lots of things that we're working on. But you can find your mix. There you go. Even at most places. I encourage you to look at some of our local retails. Not only do they need your business, they're going to be smarter about doing these kinds of things than the folks at Lowdown Depot. Just by the way, folks at Lowdown Depot, they're fine folks. They're as good of folks as the rest of us. But they work for a company that really doesn't provide the knowledge and doesn't care about providing the knowledge that you might find from a local nursery. So, something to think about there. There you go. Let's see what we've got here. When do I need to put my butter bean seed in the ground? Will they grow on the west side of my house? Be dark. Well, sure, they'll grow on the west side of your house. It's a great place to do it. And be dark, you know that I will talk about this again, because I always love talking about it. Butter bean shade. This was my grandmother talked about butter bean shade. My great grandmother talked about butter bean shade. Everybody knew what butter bean shade was. Butter bean shade was when you attached your plants, you attached string to the side of your eaves, which stuck out way over the house in a good old southern house. They don't do that anymore because we build houses like we live in Massachusetts. Which is a fine place to live if you happen to live in Massachusetts, but you don't want to build your building that way down here. But we used to have big eaves, and the eaves projected out, and we put strings on those eaves, and we put our butter beans up and down on those strings. And you know the best place to put it, be dark, is on the west side of your house. Why is that? Why is that, be dark? You thought about it? Well, from a house perspective, the place that's going to heat up the worst is always going to be the western side. You're always, it's those west-facing windows are responsible for more heat gain, more summer heat gain than any other window in your house. Unfortunately, in winter, they don't provide that much heat gain because the sun isn't going down in the west. It's going down in the southwest. But in summer, it's going down in the west to the northwest. And so all that heat is just pouring into those west-facing windows directly. That's why I use Butterbean Shade. You ain't ready for them yet, though. We'll talk about it when we come back.
I'm living in the garden again, and I'll keep on praying with two dirty hands. I'm living, yes, living in the garden.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Questions on conservation, natural history, and gardening? Talk with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 1065.
Oh boy, I got a lot of fun questions to answer this morning. I'm looking forward to it. Ted, you hold on. You don't let me drop your question about those longleaf. We're going to get to that. Keith, and let me, I got to go with B-Dark first, because we started with B-Dark. B-Dark, I get so excited thinking about butter beans and butter bean shade and how useful butter bean shade is. So it's going to shade that western side of your house. Isn't that super cool? And so you don't get the heat coming into those windows. And if you don't think that, that makes a huge difference on your power bill. A huge difference on your power bill. And if you think about it, it's that, you know, the eastern sun, oh, it's, you know, it's, but your house is cooler and it has less of an impact generally. But it's the east-facing and west-facing windows that gain the most heat in summer and not as much heat in the winter as you would like. But if you can protect those west-facing windows, it makes a ton of difference on your heating bill. Now, If you only did one thing at a time, if you're a one thing at a time kind of person, maybe that's all you need to think about. But I'm not a one thing at a time kind of person. I like to think, gosh, how am I going to address several problems at once here? Well, I don't want to just do one thing. I want to do multiple things when I fix something. I don't know. I'm bad that way. But it's kind of neat if you can do that. And so what if shading the west side of your house, if you did it with something like butter beans, which are really good to eat, and you can pick them, and they're kind of pretty. Some of them, like willow leaf butter bean, which is really pretty in the way the leaves grow, it's a fine thing, and you actually get good butter beans. I prefer, and that's nice too, there's a little bit more prettiness. Prettiness rate's a little higher in that scheme. But actually, just like just regular old butter beans. And I think the flowers are just beautiful, and I think the leaves are beautiful, and I think a good butter bean like Florida Speckled or Alabama Black Eye or many of the others would be are great for that, and just the thing to do. You don't want to do it now because butter beans need warm soil. They need warm soil to get going. I mean, they're a tropical bean, and that's why they do well in Alabama. I really don't even think there's much benefit to starting them too early. You definitely want your shade up there by June. So if you're looking at shade on the west side of your house, you might plant them in May. Or early May, and I think you'd probably get significant shade by June and July and August, and those are going to be, you're going to get good coverage. There's no need to start them before the middle part of April. I will say that. Even in Mobile, it just, you're not going to get a lot. You might get some butter beans, but probably you're not going to get that many. And really, starting them a little later, they're not going to produce a lot of butter beans in the middle part of summer, which is fine. You got your shade. But then in September, late August, September, October, boy, they're going to produce a ton. And that's when they do their best anyway. So there you go. Butter beans a little later. But start planning for them. Figure out how you're going to post them on the west side of your house so that it protects that west side of the house from that western sun. There you go. Two things at once, B-Dark. I think it's kind of cool doing it that way. Let's see. Keith says, Keith is saying to me, I've never grown, started tomatoes for seed. And he's remembering that his, my dad used to broadcast the seeds and we extracted the plant and replanted after it grew about 6 to 8 inches. Is this the best way? Not for a, if I'm understanding what you're doing, probably not. Because you don't get your tomatoes started early enough. And it sounds to me, I'm not sure where he did this or under what circumstances. Maybe a little farther north. Here's the key, Keith. Let's go back. Because we're not going to get a lot of tomato production on the Gulf Coast. And even in South Alabama, generally, after the 1st of July. Or certainly middle of July. And there's a lot of reasons for that. So we want to get all of our tomato production in as soon as we can early, or we can get it in later in the year. So you can start your tomatoes later. But generally, if you want tomatoes before July, or before, let's say, if you want tomatoes before the 1st of September, you're going to have to get them started very early. Because there's a doldrums there in July and August on the Gulf Coast. If you're a little farther north, if you're in North Alabama, you don't have to worry about it quite as much, but it's even a problem there. So on the Gulf Coast, what that means is you've got to start your tomatoes super early, and you need to start them inside in a warm place, or your tomatoes aren't going to be large enough to put outside. So take advantage of that window. And that means starting them in a container. Find a good container. You're not looking for something big. As I said, you don't want a huge container to get started. And with tomatoes, and you bump them up, as we like to say in the nursery industry. If you want to get a bigger plant with time, and you're holding them for a long time, you put them in a larger pot. You graduate them to a larger pot. But get them started. You want a smaller container. And get them started in that windowsill. And use a heating mat. And that way you can get those tomatoes up. You can get your peppers up. And you'll have them ready to put in the ground. If you're on the Gulf Coast, you want them ready to put in the ground sometime between, that first week in March. And if the climate adjusts and you've got everything together, even the last week in February, put them in the ground. But usually around the first week in March, you can delay a little bit, but not too much, because after March 15th, it gets really hard to get a tomato productive enough before the doldrums knock it down. So there you go. Does this help, Keith? You keep asking questions, and we'll do our best to try to figure out how to make it work for you. But I think a good window inside is the key. If you have a hotbed outside, you got to have some way to heat it up, and that's hard. That's complicated. Super complicated. We could talk about it, but that's really for production. And you're not trying to produce hundreds of tomatoes. You're just trying to produce. Yeah, if you had a dozen tomatoes, you wouldn't know what to do with all of them if they were good tomatoes. So just a few. There you go. So I wouldn't go with that. There you go. Where is the best place to get tomato seeds? The best place to get tomato seeds is the place that sells tomatoes that are going to grow well in the South. So I guess I got to talk a little bit about tomatoes. And there's some folks out there who know what I'm going to say. If you grow those super big heirloom tomatoes that everybody talks about, or even the super big hybrid tomatoes that everybody talks about, like Big Boy and all those others, let me tell you what happens. You're going to get stink bugs, and they're going to wipe out your crop. The big tomatoes are always the wateriest. The big tomatoes generally have, they may be pretty, they may be impressive, like driving around in a big Range Rover or something. But let me tell you, the big tomatoes aren't really the best tomatoes. In fact, the tomatoes that have the best flavor are usually the smaller tomatoes. And they're usually the best for cooking. They're also the best for slicing. And I always, when I grow some of my smaller tomatoes, people say, gosh, these tomatoes are so good. So you want a tomato that is prolific, that produces a lot of tomatoes, even if they're not super big. Some people stick strictly with cherry tomatoes. That's okay, and that's a good way of doing it. I think it's a fine way of doing it, particularly the tomatoes that are well adapted to our climate and that produce early. You don't want a cherry tomato that takes 90 days to start producing. You want a tomato that's going to start producing, if you're on the Gulf Coast, in about 70 days, a little sooner if possible. That's after you put it in the ground. But smaller tomatoes are some of the best tomatoes. There's a bunch of them out there. It's always fun to experiment. But don't be sucked into these stories about, man, he's got the biggest tomato ever. Because if you get the biggest tomato ever, you're going to get one. And you know what? The stink bugs are going to get to it before you do. And that one tomato is going to rot there on the vine. You want a tomato that's producing, that'll outproduce the stink bugs, that'll outproduce the worms. You want a tomato that produces more tomatoes than you can actually eat. Now, this is very frustrating, I will say, because you're looking at that tomato, you say, God, I got to pick all these tomatoes. You don't have to pick them all. Just pick the ones that are best. Those are the best tomatoes. So where do you get those? Well, you don't get them from the place that says, oh, we do heirloom tomatoes. Well, they may do heirloom tomatoes. My favorite tomato comes from a place called Tomato Fest. Some of you have to remind me what that place is, because I forget the names of all these seed places. But Tomato Fest, I remember today, is where I get one of my favorites, which is called Santiago. There are several tomatoes out there called Santiago, but the one sold by Tomato Fest, a Santiago, I find does very well. And may even continue producing through the middle of summer. The tomatoes are beautiful. When you cut them open, they're beautiful. They're great for slicing. They're not little cherries. They're great for slicing, but they're not huge. They are, you know, they're the size of big golf balls. And that's okay. They're really nice. They're really good that way. And they are incredibly prolific. And the vine grows like crazy. So you don't want to put them on a little bitty. You don't want to hang them on some little thing. Little hoop things that you get from Lowdown Depot. You're going to have to put them on something big. And we can talk about that. We'll talk about that. But right now we just got to start them. And you just got to buy the seeds. And Tomato Fest has got a lot of seeds. So there are other places that have seeds. What are some of the, there's a bunch of them. You know, a lot of people love black cherry, which is a great tomato. And a lot of places carry black cherry, which is a tomato that was developed in the South. It's a good tomato. I've found some others that are better, but it's a good one and it's easy to find. And none of these I'm recommending are super big tomatoes. I used to recommend super big tomatoes or moderately big tomatoes, but I always recognize that they have problems, and they never produced enough to really make me happy, nor did they taste as good. Did that help?
You get Plain Talk on Plain Living. Let's talk about living and growing in the deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 1065.
Yeah, all right. So David Hubble, man, David was worried. Last time I heard from him, he said, "Oh man, I'm behind." But he's got him. He's got the tomatoes started. So follow David. Don't pay attention to me. Follow David's example. David is a smart guy, and he's got his tomatoes started already. Got him in what he calls peat pods, and I think I understand what he's saying. I don't think he meant pots. I think he means pods, and that's one way to do it. There's a lot of techniques out there for starting the seeds, but start out with a smaller pot. Don't start out with a big pot. I'm just telling you, it makes it a lot harder to manage. It makes it a lot harder to balance it on the windowsill. It makes it a lot harder to give each of your seedlings enough light. Start out with smaller containers, and you don't have to fill them half full. We'll go through it again if you need me to. But, yeah, it's now time to start things like tomatoes. And David is still a week or two behind on his peppers and his eggplants. It doesn't matter as much about the eggplants, I will say. You can get those started a little later. They are heat tolerant. And even throughout Alabama, I would say getting your eggplants in later, is a good thing to do. And a couple of reasons for that is that, one, they love heat. They are very tolerant of hot weather, and the best eggplants, not the Italian eggplants, but particularly the Asian eggplants and the Indian eggplants and the eggplants that come from the places where eggplants really got its start. Cambodia, this is an Asian vegetable. They love hot weather. They really love, and they even tolerate humidity really well. So you can keep those eggplants going through summer. I don't want to dwell on this too long because I want to get back to the things you do need to do now. And I will also tell you that even if you're in North Alabama, the if you wait long enough, the little flea beetles that just pester the stew out of eggplants, even in central Alabama, if you wait long enough, they disappear. And so you'll get your best eggplant crop after July. So wait on the eggplants. I don't even think there's even a need to start them now. But David's a smart guy, and David may argue with me on this, and I'll listen to him. But I'd say not start them right now. But definitely good to start some peppers now. If you're growing bell peppers, you got to basically treat them just like you treat the tomatoes. You know you're going to have to get them in early. You know that they're not going to produce worth a toot when after the 1st of July, if you're on the Gulf Coast, they may do a little better when you get up to where Clayton is in Birmingham. But they're not going to produce at all after July on the Gulf Coast. So you want to get those started a little early too. And even if you're using the peppers that I love, that are incredibly prolific and that love the heat, takes them a little longer to get cranked up, so you want to get those started now. So I think it's a good time to start peppers. All in all, it's a great time to start your peppers as well. Eggplants you can delay, but tomatoes and peppers pretty important right now. And what else am I missing here? If you should probably order, if you're ordering from Tomato Fest, you should probably order in October. I guess the suggestion is that it takes them a while to get here. It does a little bit. They're not too bad. And it depends on the time of year. I think if you order now before everybody else does, they're probably going to get here reasonably quickly. I don't see that Tomato Fest is necessarily any slower than anybody else. But if you order late in the year, if you order March and April, you're going to have problems. You order now, I think you'll be good a lot of these places. Southern, and David Hubble mentioned several others that he gets his from, like Southern Exposure, which is a fine place. I don't have any particular choices there, that, but David's got 14 varieties, and he can tell you which ones do well, which ones don't do well, and we'll press him on that a little later in the year when he's had a chance to look at all of his 14 varieties and how they perform. But a lot of different places. Clegg's over in Baton Rouge, David recommends. I haven't been to Clegg's, but if David says they're doing good things, they probably are. And you should certainly look to see what's available at some of our local seed places as well, some of our local nurseries, locally owned nurseries. The seed selection at the lowdown depots is just horrendous. I'll have to say, I mean, it's weird, even. I wouldn't start there, but there you go. Well, and Clay in Birmingham also had some observations about tomatoes. We're getting into the growing of them, but the growing them out in your garden part of it, which is the second stage here. But he likes, up around Birmingham, he likes Bonnie's. Bonnie's Original is his favorite. Good slicer. Does well for him. I think those probably do better in Birmingham, where you don't, where the summer nights are not quite as difficult as they are on the Gulf Coast. And I don't know that Bonnie's Original will do as well farther south, but Clay gives a good recommendation for his part of the world. And that's good too. And Clayton also sent me a picture in October. I don't know, remember whether I complimented on it, on a growing technique for his beans. And I just noticed it as I was looking, and I may have overlooked it earlier. It's a really neat technique. And we may talk about that, how you're going to train your beans, how you train some other things. It's a cool thing to think about. And I'm thinking about it already and thinking about, is there a more inventive way I can do this? There's something fun about thinking about how to build trellises. I don't know. Don will chime in if he's listening on all of that, but it's we'll have to start thinking about trellises too. We won't do that too much today, but yes, it's time for all of these things. Let's see who else is who else have we got. So Amy asked me, I've got rooted tomato seedlings from last fall. Are the pros and cons to cuttings compared to planting seeds? I think there's a slightly greater chance that with cuttings you're going to carry over disease. So you want to think about that and you want to check on that. But I think particularly, I don't know. I have not ever done that. I've never carried a tomato seedling over by cuttings throughout the entire winter. So I can't comment specifically. I do always worry about diseases when you're doing that kind of thing. And some diseases are systemic, not all, but some. And so that's the con. The pro is that it's, you got a plant. And it's ready to go. And you just have to manage it until it's ready to put out in the garden. We'll be back.
Me and my best friend Lillian in her blue tick and all Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played.
It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast, with nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. It's a Mississippi Sunday morning over there, isn't it, Keith? It's a Northwest Florida Sunday morning. It's a Georgia Sunday morning. We got listeners a little bit all over. May even have a few in Tennessee now. So we're talking about getting things ready, and it's true throughout the state that it is time. The howling winds, which some of us are experiencing already, these cold howling winds, that is the signal that you got to get your garden ready. That's just how it is. It ain't Minnesota, which is a fine place, Minnesota. We're here in the deep south. And so we have to think about things differently. And so if you're getting your advice about vegetable planting from, be aware that people don't all live in the same place. I don't know if you've noticed that. It's harder to see now. It's harder to discern now that everybody's connected by the internet. But people don't all live in the same place, and they don't have the same growing conditions, and they don't even have the same seasons. So we got to start where we are. Our winter season is very short. Our spring starts on the Gulf Coast, on the immediate Gulf Coast. Spring is going to start February 15th. You know, it's going to start pretty close to Mardi Gras. Always does. Mardi Gras is our spring festival on the Gulf Coast. And it may still be a little cold, but spring is that way. I mean, it's just always a little cold at the start of spring, but it's the start of spring just as surely as it's the start of spring, as the start of spring is sometime in May in New England. It's just when our spring starts, February 15th. So we got to get ready for it. We got to get ready to put those tomatoes out, not on the first day of spring, but sometime towards the early middle of spring, we want to get those tomatoes out, which means that first week in March. Farther north in Alabama, spring is coming a little later. Oh, I don't know. I mean, maybe we call spring starting about March 1st to March 15th, somewhere around Huntsville. And somewhere in between, you know, the places in between, it's kind of in between. So we got to get ready for it. It's time to get ready for spring. And so we're talking a lot about of all things on this cold winter day. We're talking about tomatoes. We also are going to talk about fire. And I have a perfect opportunity to talk about fire with a lot of folks because we got some questions about it. And this is the time of year that we're actually starting to think about fire. I actually sat down with my wife yesterday. This is weird for some of you, I know. But we sat down and we looked at, okay, let's come up with a burn plan for the coming year at the Farm Research Center where we work. And here's where we're gonna burn. Here's when we're gonna burn. And that'll always vary a little bit, but it's the time of year to begin thinking about that, so we're going to do that as well. And one of the things that I've wanted to stress how we grow these tomatoes out, and you should keep asking me questions about it. Again, I think that starting with small containers, only filling them half full so that they're not, if is a good way to do it. Get your tomatoes started and then fill in with dirt as they get to the top of the container. It's good. It has solved several problems. Get you a little heating mat. It really is useful. It'll last you several years. It shouldn't cost too much. I haven't bought one recently. The one I've had has lasted for quite a while. But having a little inexpensive heating mat is quite useful. Designed for plants, designed for growing out plants. It's a really nice thing. And you'll need a little tray to do it, to to put it all in, and then you need a sunny window. I'll tell you something else about the window, which I didn't talk about earlier, is I want a window that's getting maximum sunlight. Some double pane windows are designed now to limit the amount of sunlight that comes through. And those are, I can't use the word bad. Those are bad windows. They drive me crazy. I dislike them. I like having light come through. And I like it for my plants. And yeah, you don't need them on the south facing windows, which is the place to put them. So I hope you don't have those. But you want to be aware that they put these kinds of weird things in windows now that keep light from coming through. And I hope you don't have that. You'll have to deal with it if you do. But one of the other things that keeps light from coming through are screens. And screens, we don't think about it, but screens really filter out, not only, they filter out bugs. And that's really useful. And screens, I can't go on about how screens changed the South, perhaps as much as air conditioning changed the South. Screens were hugely important in learning to live here. And I think they're great. They're great devices for keeping out bugs and really important. And every window should have screens. But I will also tell you that screens cut down on airflow and light. And so the light is particularly important this time of year, and so I actually choose a window, or I take the window off, or I take the screen off of the window so that I can get more light. It can make a bit of difference. And it's not like you're going to be opening that window a lot while these cold winds are blowing. So that's okay, and you're not going to get a lot of bugs this time of year. So if you like growing plants, and if you really want to get the most out of your window, take the screen off. Am I asking too much? Well, I don't know. You don't have to do it. It's easy. I just take my screen off and I put it back on. There you go. Is this a good time to start petunia seeds? Yes. Yes. I have snapdragons in the ground now that are growing well. Some are blooming. So far, the cold weather we've had hasn't affected them, and I didn't cover them. George in Pascagoula. Yeah, I love snapdragons. I am a absolute kid around snapdragons, and it's just the idea. I don't even have this aesthetic appreciation for them. I kind of do. It's just this childlike appreciation for being able to know that I can put them between my fingers and make them snap like a dragon. I don't know. Is it crazy? I mean, we should all think that way, I think. I think it helps. You want snapdragons because they look like snappy little dragons. And you should actually play with them. This is why you grow. But here's the cool thing about snapdragons. If you think they're pretty, and they are, if you can get past the snapdragon long enough to think about, oh, these are pretty. Well, they grow through winter here, and they actually do quite well through winter. So George over in Pascagoula got his going early enough, and you can do this from seed back in summer. Get them going, get them ready to bloom, and they'll bloom through the winter on the Gulf Coast quite well. Petunias are also very cold tolerant. And so if you want them to bloom, you definitely want to get them started early with your tomatoes. Yes, thank you, George and Pascagoula, for reminding us that this is a good time to start a lot of flowering plants as well, like petunias. Get them started now. They will tolerate the cold very well. They're amazingly good at dealing with frost down to, I don't know, probably around 25 degrees. We'll be back. Grow on, sweet potato vine. Have you ever seen peaches? Grow on, sweet potato vine. Why wake up, woman, take your legs off mine.
She thought she'd have to drive hours for cancer care that understood her. Turns out, it was only a few minutes away. Southern Cancer Center. How we treat you matters most.
FM Talk 106.5. Home for plain living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106.
Excuse me. You know, there was this flu thing, and I was not immune to it. Gardner does not make you immune to the flu. I did get over it fairly quickly. It may be because I had a flu shot. But there's that lingering cough, and it keeps going, and so I have to apologize for you for it. We're talking about starting seeds, and that's a great thing, and everybody's now getting revved up, and I'm so glad to hear from all of you. And I'm so glad that you're asking questions, and you feel free to call or text or call and ask questions about what kind of seedlings, what kind of seeds should we be starting now? Doesn't have to be just vegetables. It can be most anything. I've emphasized tomatoes and peppers here, and that's good. We talked about petunias. Nasturtiums is something we should have added to this list. And I gotta say, if you haven't grown nasturtiums before, start them now. There have been some complaints. I think, well, from several of you, and I understand it because I complain about it too. Sometimes nasturtiums don't start as well. And I'll tell you, here's the clear thing. Here's the fun thing about nasturtiums. You don't have to put them in a super warm place. Don't put them in a super warm place. Do not put nasturtiums in the same place, in a warm place, like you want to grow tomatoes and start the seeds for tomatoes and peppers this time of year. Do not do that. Put them in a cooler place. You know, I think 65 degrees is kind of perfect. Anywhere between 55 and 65 degrees is perfect. I think at 70 degrees, nasturtium germination declines, particularly around 75. So you don't want them super warm. That's one of the things I found. The other thing I found is nasturtium seeds, you need fresh seeds, particularly in a climate like ours where they do tend to absorb moisture from the air. I think the seeds go bad quickly. I have tried to preserve nasturtium seeds for a couple of years. It just doesn't work. You'll get the germination rate just declines rapidly. If you put them in a drier, colder place, maybe they would be fine. But I haven't done that, and I don't think you'll probably do that in an effective way. So let me just say, use fresh nasturtium seeds. But it's a great time of year to plant them. And like I say, I love doing more than one thing at a time. I love the look of them. I mean, I love the flowers. They are pretty. The leaves are pretty, and that's all good. But, you know, I always love doing more than one thing at a time. And so I love the fact that nasturtiums are delicious to eat, and they're great in salads, and you can just pile a salad up with nasturtium flowers, and it's not just the most spectacular salad you've ever seen. It's one of the tastier salads you'll ever have, because you get that wonderful nectar, that sweet nectar of the nasturtium blooms. The nice texture and a little bite, just that little nasturtium bite, just that little nip. Oh, they're so good. The leaves are great too, and you can mix them in with lots of things. And they're really, you know, I don't know. I hate to get overboard on this nutrition things because people are insane about nutrition things sometimes. And protein things. What a silly thing, protein. But nasturtiums are really good. They got lots of healthy things going on there, and that's good too. What else we got? Let's see. Who has a large variety of plants and seeds for my garden? Well, Yes, so we've talked about some of them there, and High Plains Drifter, and so Southern Exposure is good. Baker Creek is fun for seeds. Baker Creek, Southern Exposure. Tomato Fest, we said, for tomatoes. There's a lot of, you know, I could talk about Experimental Farm Network. That may be a little over some folks' heads, but those of you who love dealing with growing out your own seeds and sort of starting from scratch and thinking about how do I want to develop these seeds over time, saving the seeds, developing them, Experimental Farm Network is a really good place. It's not for the beginning grower, I think, but it's a lot of fun for people to look in on. I've gotten a lot of things from them. But I will say Southern Exposure, Baker Creek, seeds, and have been big mainstays. I occasionally get things from Johnny's. Johnny's and is a little annoying to me at times because they really are designed for New England, and they really are designed for commercial growers, I think, more than anything else. High Mowing is another alternative up there that I've gotten seeds from them before, and they occasionally have some really good stuff. Territorial Seeds I get things from, but those are northern sources that sometimes don't have as many seeds that are good for the Deep South. I wish we had more great seed sources for the Deep South. Where do you get plants? You know, I think in general you want to grow the plants out yourself. And there are some exceptions, but mostly right now we're in a position where we need to grow them out ourselves. If you wanted the plants grown out for you, we're going to have to work more closely and more carefully with our locally owned retailers, encouraging them to get those seedlings grown out sooner, or with our local botanical gardens. And that botanical gardens is going to be a great source. I hope you'll work with them. And I'm just telling you, your future as a gardener is going to depend on your working with your local botanical gardens. There's the Mobile Botanical Gardens. And if you don't, there's Birmingham. If you don't work with those folks, you're not going to have the plants available for your garden. I can talk all I want to, and you can hear me talk, and you can say, yeah, but I can't get that plant. And I'm going to say, yeah, I'm sorry. We have to do that if we want those plants available. We have to think about that, okay? So let's do that. Jarhead, are you there?
Yeah, Bill.
Tell me what's going on.
Well, I've been hearing you talk about tomatoes. I've seen this little video the other day. I don't want to know what you think about it. Say,
yeah,
if you have a tomato plant, say, about a foot, foot and a half tall, they say don't plant it straight up and down. Break the limbs off of it for about a foot of it, say a foot and a half plant, and break off foot and lay it down and leave the little, oh, how we call them, little nipples that are protruding out of the side, and lightly cover it with soil, bend it up, and maybe stake it where the flowery part of the plant, and then it will grow plants off of the whole stem.
Mostly, yes, I think that's the way to go. Let me, but I think if you do it right, you won't have to do that. And in essence, that's sort of what I'm advocating by setting your pot up so that you actually build the soil up and you grow roots all along the stem. In the past, so there's so many things to break down there. Let's just go with what you're saying. Yes, if you have a lanky tomato that has that's gotten too big for its britches, it's gotten too tall, has a very thin stem, there's probably a good reason to lay that tomato down and turn the tip up and let it root out a little better along the stem. There's some reasons for doing that. I don't think you're going to see a lot of tomatoes emerging. You're only going to see that one tip. But what you will get is you'll get a lot of roots forming along that stem. How did we get to the break so quickly, Jarhead? We just got started. Can you
I'll hang on through the break.
Thank you.
FM Talk 106.5 with Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Call 251-343-0106. Here again is your personal nature expert, Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning, Georgia Sunday morning. I'm getting to you, Paul. So, Mississippi Sunday morning. It's a Saraland Sunday morning because Jarhead's calling us. Jarhead, we were talking about, Jarhead asked me, and I think you're still with us, aren't you, Jarhead?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah. So Jarhead was saying he had heard about a technique where you took a tomato and you, once you planted it in the ground and you took the stem and you bent it down into the ground a little bit, if you can kind of imagine just laying that stem down with the tip, with the very tip, several inches, a few inches of the tip, well, let's say I'm looking at a space of about 3 to 4 inches above the ground, and you bury the rest of that stem underground. You could take the leaves and the suckers off if you wanted to. That would probably be a good idea. The virtue of doing that is that you get that plant to root out along the stem. You'll form another set of roots along the stem. And that can be helpful if your tomato is lanky. You know, it's gotten much taller than it is gotten broader. And that happens sometimes when you grow things out. And you'll get a few more roots. And it's a good way of doing that. There used to be a prescription, Jarhead, that people would say, oh, you plant your tomatoes super deep. So if you had a lanky tomato, that you were supposed to plant it deeper. Well, the trouble with that is that you lose all the roots on the bottom because there's no oxygen deep in the soil. And well, those roots run into problems. So this is a much better way of dealing with that. Again, I don't think you'll get a lot of different plants growing up. In fact, you probably don't want that. You'll just have one main stem, but you will get more roots. You don't have to do this every time. It's just if you get a lanky tomato. I think it's useful. And if you don't think you have a lot of roots already on it compared to its height.
It's a good idea. And it's like I say, it's something you could try on a lanky plant, but, I did have one more question because I love hostas. I love the color, the way the leaves grow. And I seen this thing the other day, and I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's a midnight blue or midnight black hosta, and then I've seen some more advertisements for rainbow hostas. Have you ever heard of this? Or is this just some AI stuff that's coming up on Facebook or whatever?
Oh, there's tons of AI stuff that we don't know what it means. There are only a few hostas that will do really well in Saraland and in Mobile. What is the name of that? I'll think of it in just a minute if you'll give me a chance after this break. I don't know what a rainbow hosta is, but if you like the look, I have just no idea. I suspect that it's one of those things where the internet makes us all feel like we live in the same place, and we don't all live in the same place. And hostas grow just fine in New England, but they don't do so well down here, except for a few varieties whose name I'm going to remember, and I will tell you after the next break. But yeah, I'm kind of suspicious of that. Now, I will tell you that if people who love big-leafed things like hostas, there's so many tropical plants that do the same thing and do it better. And one thing to experiment with, if you love hostas and you love colors and you love different things, is look at things like coleus. They're really great. They're great annuals. And they really have some of that same big leaf impressive effect, except they're much more colorful. And if I were going to think, if I said, well, what's a rainbow hosta? I said, is it as pretty as a coleus? Would be my question. Because coleus are stunning. They're beautiful. So experiment with coleus. And there's a lot of other tropical perennials, near perennials, that are also great for that situation. We used to have a lot of gingers. And little dwarf gingers like that, with leaves that look like hostas that are really beautiful. If we can still find them, I think the botanical garden should sell them. They're out there. They are really incredible too. They're not hostas, but they're much more impressive than hostas. And they're actually gingers, that are dwarfed, not on tall stems, but that stay close to the ground like a hosta does. Really big leaves on those, and they're really cool. So I don't know what's being... It's harder to find things on the internet now because there's so much AI stuff out there that's actually being produced by... I don't know. It's just regurgitated junk is what it is, and you have to filter through all that. I'll look up these rainbow hostas on the next break and see what I come up with. And then I'll tell you the names of the hostas that do well.
It's good to talk to you, Bill. I'm glad. I hope your New Year is going well. And it's, like I said, it's time to start getting ready to start turning our yards pretty again, which I just got in my new weeding tool. It's basically a 2-foot torch that you put a little propane bottle on. And, you know, it may not work as well, but it's a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's right. That's good. That's right. So it can. It does a little better after the ground dries out. But yeah, there you go. All right. Good.
All right, Bill. Well, have a great day, and we'll be listening to the rest of the show.
All right. Thanks, Jarhead. So, we got a lot of questions here that I'm going to deal with. But it's time now. We had to get to this thing about fire, and we've got several people. Got a caller over there in Mississippi who said, Helena, I don't know how we say it in Mississippi, but out of control wildfire got 9 acres of our savanna last Friday. We have pines and what I believe is native white cypress. We shall proceed to eliminate harmful growth. So it's, you know, it's a great thing that fire got 9 acres of your savanna. And if you lose a few trees, and this is, Ted, this is also a thing. If you lose a few trees, that's okay. That's the way it's supposed to happen. What you want ultimately with a good savanna where you have a lot of wildlife, And it resembles what was here when we first found here with the great timber and everything else, is you had only a few trees per acre. And that's okay. Maybe that's too spaced out for you, and that's all right too, but you don't want every one of those trees surviving the fire. So Ted, I'd say to you, Ted asked me, I'm going to burn. Ted's got a beautiful savanna in the remaking. He's got some broom sage. It's looking pretty good. He's got some great longleaf coming in. He's got some loblollies coming in with it. And they're both about 12 to 15 feet tall. And that's getting to the point where most of those trees, even the lobs, are going to begin to be a little more fire resistant. And lobs are not quite as much as the longleaf, but it's getting to that stage where they're pretty good. You may lose a few. And you know what? Looking at that density of those trees coming in, if you think about all those trees growing up, that's a good thing, because if all those trees grow up, you're going to have a deep, dark, stanky pine plantation. And you don't want that. You want an open place with grasslands and birds and wildflowers, and so you can afford to lose a few. As happened in over in Mississippi on the 9 acres, if there's a lot, and I the pictures haven't come through yet, but if you want, if there's a lot of duff associated, it hadn't been burned in a while, you could get some loss of those plants, but I think you're going to be okay. I think you're going to be fine. You can modify the burn to lessen the intensity. Ted, looking at your property, I don't think the intensity is going to be that great. One thing to think about is flame height. Oh, I'm getting too technical here. But your flame height of those grasses is going to be about twice as tall as the grasses, which means it's going to miss the critical buds at the tops of those trees. And so on a 12-foot tree, you don't have 6-foot-high grasses. You have 3-foot-high grasses. And so your flame height's going to be about twice that. Your buds on your trees are going to be twice that. So I think they're going to be fine. And if you lose a few, thumbs up, because you got a lot of density there. You got a lot of density. You can also rake around them if you like. And that's good, too. Don't rake around all of them, because you don't need to keep them all. Yeah, and it will burn into the duff. And this is a good thing. You know, I will say over there in Mississippi, it's a good thing when it burns into the duff in a true savanna sometimes, even though you may lose some trees. What that does is it releases some seeds that have been trapped by all that accumulated organic matter, and you could end up with some really cool stuff showing up after this burn. You may be surprised at how good it is. You may be surprised. The white cedars, which I think you're calling native white cypress, I would call them cedars, I think, if what we're talking about is the same thing. And you can ask me, you can, if these pictures come through, I can tell. But those cedars, I'm assuming they're white cedars, are probably not part of a fire. They are part of a fire climax system, but you probably don't want as much fire getting into those because they don't deal with fire quite as well. And they probably are in a wet place where there's not, where the fire didn't penetrate. I'll be interested to hear on that. So keep me posted on that. Yeah, it's coming up fire season. I got to go to a big fire training thing next week. Oh, boy. Yeah, I got to do the PAC test. Anybody know what that is? I'm getting too old for the PAC test. And we got to go through it. But it's good because we're going to be looking at some of the latest techniques. I got a lot of questions for folks to think about what conditions we burn in. How you burn a forest when you're doing a prescribed burn is pretty important. It's good to think about. When you burn it is good to think about. And there's a lot of ways of modifying that fire regime, that fire intensity, so that you can count more on what you want. But a good hot burn, as long as it didn't do damage to houses or to Mardi Gras floats, those of you who know will know what I'm talking about. As long as that doesn't happen, your forest is probably going to be in generally better condition. Otherwise, you're going to have better bird life, you got better quail, you got better wildflowers. Gary, let's talk about it.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Oh, man, time flies. Cut that music down. We got business to attend to here. Bruce is likes Lazy Dog Farm over in South Georgia, and I've looked at their website. They got some interesting stuff. I haven't ordered from them, but they do. It's a pretty cool looking place, and I know they're experimenting with some great things for this part of the world. Tim in Cypress Shores sends me pictures of collard trees, which I love collard trees. If you haven't ever seen one, it's a kind of a South Alabama, South Mississippi phenomenon. You don't see them as much farther north, but these are overwintering collards, and they can be they can be trees, and they're pretty cool, and I always admire them, and they're pretty cool. We'll talk about them maybe more next week. Ted, I want to talk about your huckleberries a lot, and how they're going to fare in this. And it's a big question because there's a lot of different kinds of blueberries out there. Blueberries, huckleberries, all the same thing. Ted, let's talk about that next week. And we'll talk about it. And we got a comment. When we went to Yellowstone this year after the big fire, the year after the big fire, the wildflowers were spectacular. Yes, a lot to talk about there with fire. Is it okay to order Swiss chard seeds now for fall? Yes, Swiss chard seeds last pretty well. You could sow them now. Paul, I am so sorry. There was so much going on. But, Paul, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for holding on.
Yes, sir. It's been a great show this morning.
Paul's over in Americas. He gives us a call. And tell me what's going on, Paul.
I've got some Cream 40 seeds I bought last spring from my garden, and not that they cost much at all, but I hate wasting. Can I reuse them this year? Is that something you need to start over with every year?
Paul, I heard everything except for what kind of seeds they were. Tell me what kind?
Cream 40 peas.
Cream 40. Yeah, I think they're going to be fine. Beans and peas tend to hold on they tend to last a while. And so I think you're not going to have any problems with those. I do a terrible job of providing perfect conditions for my seeds. I don't keep the air conditioning on all the time, you know, and so it gets humid. And the thing that I always can count on basically surviving for a long time are bean and pea seeds. And so I think you're going to be fine. Yeah, plant them.
One other quick question.
Yeah.
Tomatoes. I have to do everything with math and numbers. My growing season starts a little later than y'all. Before I plant, should I put my tomatoes in seeds in the ground to get them going in the inside?
Yeah, I think 6 weeks is a good number.
Okay.
6 weeks is a good number. That's why I always argue for starting seeds in Mobile in January, mid-January. 6 weeks usually gets you the size you want. And the later in the year you start them, actually you can shorten it just a little bit because the day length is longer, et cetera, other things. And because you can put them out sooner, you can put them out in the sun sooner. It just, there's a whole lot of things, and we'll talk about that. But 6 weeks, let's use 6 weeks as a good number. 4 weeks is pushing it. 4 weeks is pushing it. 6 weeks is a good number.
And I didn't do a heat mat last year, but based on what you're saying, I'm gonna order one of those and try that under the containers.
It makes a big difference. It makes a huge difference. And you know, it's a little extra expense, but it cuts down on your time that you have to tend to all of this and think about it. The germination will improve so much for things like tomatoes and peppers and squash and a lot of other things if you're starting for seeds. Remember that it does heat the soil up, so you don't want to use it on seeds that don't like to be heated up, like if you're starting collards or if you're starting nasturtiums. But they don't really like that kind of extra heat. So,
I was thinking bell peppers and, you know, banana peppers,
right,
and that type of thing.
You got it. There, it's going to make a ton of difference on how quickly those things germinate. You'll be surprised. Remember that heat's got to transfer from the heat mat all the way to the top of the soil where the seed is. So don't make your soil too deep. That's what I keep stressing. Don't make that soil too deep so that you get that heat to transfer to the top, And so you can control the heat coming up to the top. And then you can fill in soil as you need to. If you, you know, keep your soil about halfway filled up in the pot or container, and then fill up as you need to after germination.
2 or 3 inches or what?
You know, a couple of inches is about a good distance. If you can keep from putting, just to get your seeds started, start them in a couple of inches of soil, and that way the heat's going to transfer up there pretty quickly. That's just about enough soil to keep moisture, to keep a little moisture there. You're going to have to watch the moisture levels. And then as soon as those seeds germinate and they get their first true leaves, you start piling on extra soil.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Sounds like a plan. Well, as always, I appreciate your show, and I appreciate you being about the only garden person I listen to that's not trying to sell something and not being patronizing to some company.
Well, yeah, I mean, nobody gives me any money to do this, I will tell you. I don't know. But it's good. I'm glad it's useful information to you.
Well,
Paul,
yes, sir.
Good luck to you.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
All right, you too.
All right, thank you.
Bye. Yes, sir. We are headed out. About as soon as I get through here, I'm going to have me a bowl of popcorn, which is something I do when I got to do it quick. And we are going to head out and head down to the Whaley Center in Central Alabama, Bullitt County, near Union Springs. We're going to be doing fire training with our team, our forest team, because fire is so, it's so important to restoring Alabama and to making Alabama all it can be. That's right. It is incredibly important. If you're in a smaller yard, it might not work. I don't want you to do that. You call me before you get started and let's talk about it. But if you've got a bigger place, it's something to think about, and it's something we need to think about more. So much of the wildlife we love, and the wildlife we depend on, the wildflowers we would like to have, the forest that we would like to see, the places we would like to enjoy, to think about how dependent they are on fire. It's incredible. And so we're starting to think about that. We'll talk about some of the fire training we do maybe next week. I hope you'll give me more calls. Ted, it's a good time. Maybe I can close out with Ted's Huckleberries. Ted's going to think about burning his little place this week. And he's got some trees that are 12 to 15 feet tall. I think they're going to do pretty well. We can talk, if you want to call me back next week, and we can talk about the schedule. We can talk about the kind of fire conditions you want to develop there, which is going to depend on a lot of things, like your neighbors. But we'll think about that. But the huckleberries, blueberries, there's got to be a dozen kinds of blueberries that you might have on your property, and each are a little different. So we need to talk about those next week and how they're going to respond to fire. And some of them respond quite well. We'll be back.
Sometimes 1, sometimes 10. That's enough.